Blog Talk Radio.
Said he's been sober. God, it's been so good.
Oh, hey. Good enough.
God has had my back in the midst of my enemies, and I ain't even have to be there. I have grown to many cities, friends not very many, for God took care of me and my children. I'm so connected to this air that I breathe, the ocean and the sea,
the mountains, the skies, and the trees.
I'm gonna get everything.
Hello, hello, good evening, and welcome to the Metroplex Buzz. I'm Verna Thomas Milton, your host, and I want to thank you for joining our show this evening. First, I want to welcome our special guest, and this evening we have Judge Audrey Moorhead, Judge Dominique Collins, and Judge Victor Landers. I don't know where I got that George from, but anyway, I want to let everybody know that I think they are online and they're in the studio, rather. So we're going to have them to come on in just a little bit. But I want to tell everybody tonight is a very special night to me because we are getting ready for our first in-person legal clinic. And due to the COVID, we was not able to do this for 2 years. So we're coming back on Saturday. So we're going to talk about that a little bit, and we want you all to get your questions together and to call in and talk to the judges that we have here. Just in case you want to make it out on Saturday, you can probably ask some questions tonight and they can answer. But legal workshop is going to be this Saturday at the Mesquite Friendship Baptist Church, which is located off of Highway 80, 680. Is the address 680 U.S. Highway 80 in Mesquite, Texas. And that's really between Galloway and Beltline. So if you go past the Walmart store there at Beltline, you've gone too far. Get to turn around and come back. But I see that we do have our guests in the studio, and I want them to be able to talk with you all and let you know a little bit about who they are. So I want to bring on, I have Mr. Judge Landers and Judge Moorhead. Is that, I think that's you in the studio. Hello?
Yes, ma'am. This is Judge Lander.
Okay.
This is Judge Moorhead.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Well, what are we going to do? Yes, I can hear you. And what we're going to do, I'm going to let y'all get a little bit closer to your I don't know if you're on your cell phone or on your house phone. But I want you to know that we're going to have all three of you on as a panel, because if one can't answer one of the questions that come through or some of the questions that's going to be coming through on our computer, we have a computer here that shows us if the people that's online will be able to type in and send in their requests or their questions to you, okay?
Okay.
Very good.
Okay. So first of all, I want you all to let me know, Judge Moorhead, I want to let you go first. Tell us about who you are and your courts and what all you do in your courtroom.
I'm Judge Audrey Moorhead, and I am the first female and first African-American to be elected to Dallas County Criminal Court Number 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I handle misdemeanors for Dallas County. That's all I do, misdemeanors, all day, every day.
Okay. And the misdemeanors consist of such as what type of crime?
Assault, theft, DWIs, possession of drug cases, anything that's not a felony.
Okay. But a DWI has become a felony, am I correct?
It can, not always.
Okay.
But
okay.
It can become a state jail felony, a third DWI can, but doesn't always.
Okay. All right. And Judge Lander, can you talk a little bit about what your courts did and where you are today?
Yes, ma'am. How are you, Ms. Melton?
I'm just fine, sir. Thank you for asking.
Very good. Very good. Well, my name is C. Victor Lander, and I'm a former judge, retired judge from the Municipal Court for the City of Dallas, where I served for 27 years. I retired a few years ago. Municipal Court is what I call low-level misdemeanor offenses, Class C misdemeanor offenses, traffic offenses, ordinance violations, and things that are less egregious than the ones that are handled by Judge Moorhead. You go to the misdemeanor court first, and then if you do things even worse, you go to Judge Moorhead's court. And if you do things even worse than that, you end up felony courts, which is the state district court. So if we were the city court, still are the city court. And I retired from there, and I am now a professor at Paul Quinn College and at the University of North Texas at Dallas School of Law.
Very good. Okay, so what do you do at Paul Quinn?
I am in the legal studies department and handle all classes, teach. I had five classes this semester, everything from constitutional law to criminal evidence, criminal procedure, all kinds of courses that are actually taught in law school, but I try to give the young people at Paul Quinn a leg up so that when they get ready to go to law school, they're ready and know what's going on.
Okay. All right, very good. I wanted to also, I see Judge Collins haven't gotten on yet, but she may be still at the court. I'm not for sure, but I know she's going to be here before this evening is up. But one of the things that we're going to be talking about on Saturday and some of the things that people has called in about is wills and trusts and grandparents' rights when children are left. And a lot of the children are left because their parents are maybe in prison and the grandparents have the children and they need their parental rights to do a lot of things for them, and the guardianship they may need. So can either of you talk about that to me this evening?
Well, that is certainly not in the purview of the municipal court. That would be a specialty court called a probate court or the family court. But as a lawyer, a practicing lawyer, I know just a little bit about it. There are grandparent rights. Grandparents have rights that they have to actually go to the court to ask for. Those rights can certainly be granted to somebody who is a grandparent. So it does exist.
Okay. Okay. And that's the same way if a mother don't want the grandparents to see the children.
Therein lies the problem. If the mother doesn't want the grandparents to see the children, then the grandparents still have rights to see the children, and they would have to go to the family court and seek an order from the family judge, which is a district court judge, higher level than me, higher level than Judge Moorhead, and that court would have to issue an order that allows the grandparent to have visitation, similar to the kind of visitation that happens in a divorce.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Judge Lander is really correct. Texas, though, is very limited in grandparents' rights. The parents' rights always proceed as a grandparent in certain circumstances under which a grandparent may stand in the place of a parent, such as if that parent is incarcerated, debilitated in some way, mentally incapacitated, but then it's like there must be a process because technically grandparents' rights are not at the same level as a biological parent, and an actual biological parent can limit the rights of a grandparent to see a grandchild.
I didn't know that. Okay.
The Granville.
The what?
Troxel v. Granville is the leading case in family law that stood for the fact that grandparents' rights were limited. So if your mother has a child and the father's in jail, that father's parents have a different level of standing and can seek rights. But if there's just two parents, two grandparents arguing over, you know, these kids, the parents have the superseding rights.
I see. Okay. Another thing that we got some calls about, and I don't think it's in effect yet, but there's a bill maybe that's being signed or trying to be signed to actually, if a child wants to be a gender, transgender or whatever, and the parents won't accept it, that law is that they can take that, I mean, that child can be taken out of that house away from those parents and put into another environment. Are you familiar with that? Either you are familiar with that law? Or...
I am not. I would have to defer to Judge Moorhead.
Well, there are lots of bills right now to deal with transgendered children and how they are treated and what rights parents have in order to get care for those children, whether it is to object to them doing anything the same the way that they were technically born. But those bills are still pending. So I can't react to what I don't know. So
yes. We'll
have to see how those bills matriculate. But there are several bills dealing with this type of care, from whether a physician has the right to provide care, whether a parent has the right to make a decision about a child's gender assignment. So we'll just have to wait and see how those bills play out.
Okay. Well, we have one question is that the ethnic rules. There is some, right now the Supreme Court is calling for different ethnic rules for all judges now. We want to know, why didn't that exist in the beginning? Do county judges have ethnic rules?
You mean ethics, correct?
Yes, ethics rules.
Yes, all judges have rules of ethics, with the exception of the United States Supreme Court.
Correct. Absolutely.
And they accepted themselves many, many years ago, and nobody's really cared about it because most of the time they do, over the course of years, the U.S. Supreme Court justices have followed the ethics rules of the rest of the federal courts. It's only relatively recently that there have been issues in which it has been discovered that that may not be happening.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, one is saying, what about the other two judges who had the – well, this is email saying they were talking about one judge, black judge, but there was two white judges who had just made three times as much money on their businesses that their wives own. So are you not familiar with that?
I'm not specifically familiar with that particular issue, but the real issue with respect to the Supreme Court justices is that they have to report, or they're supposed to have reported what it is that they are receiving from outside. And they're not prohibited from receiving it. They're just supposed to be reporting it. And one black judge that we have an issue with here, Clarence Thomas, didn't even bother to report. Now, the other judges may have gotten more money and things like that, but they made the report, and therefore they were covered.
Also, they did report theirs?
I don't know if they did or not, but I would assume that that's the rationale behind why they're going after Thomas as much as they are. They're actually going after Gorsuch as well, and I believe they'll be looking at Kavanaugh next, because once you start opening up that can of worms, you get an opportunity to see just how much the Supreme Court justices have done without the reporting. And I believe that this is just the tip of the iceberg.
And their spouses have to report where they work. If they work for firms or in positions that could have some type of influence, so the spouses, depending on that, their spouses have a right to work and earn an income. So you have, like, Justice Roberts' wife, who makes millions as a headhunter for law firms.
Oh,
and
really?
So there may be a conflict of interest between what she does with those law firms and those law firms that may have cases in front of the Supreme Court. But there are a myriad of ethical issues that you can look at and point out. The states, the United States, all of us, Texas, Oklahoma, California, all have an ethics commission or some committee for judicial ethics. It's just the Supreme Court, like Judge Landry says, that they don't have, because there's no oversight. There's no, the three co-equal branches of government, who would be over them? Who would do it? There really isn't anything created to do an oversight of the Supreme Court.
It's very interesting when you look at it constitutionally, because we have separation of powers, which basically means there's legislative, executive, and judiciary as separate powers.
Right.
But at the same time, we have checks and balances, which are supposed to make them interact with each other. Unfortunately, the United States Supreme Court doesn't seem to be included in the checks and balances.
I see. Okay. Okay, I have to seem like my, okay, I got it. My screen went black all of a sudden. I don't know. I am learning how to do my podcast. And so I sometimes when if I don't hit it at a certain time, it's going to like it goes out. But I have another question that's coming over, and that's probably the reason why it blanked out. It says that there are, do any of the judges know about the law for Texas farmers about hemp? Is it true that we can grow hemp now in Texas? Because there is a farm in Texas that grows cannabis hemp.
That's an interesting question. I understand what you're saying. That's a very interesting question. But as far as I know, cannabis cannot be grown in the state of Texas. It can be used only when medically provided. Is that right, Judge?
Yes, right now it's medically, it has to be prescribed medicinally, and that's cannabis with THC. Hemp is different. It's a derivative of that plant, and so it is different, but I don't know as much about hemp law, but hemp is not illegal, so to speak, but you have to be derived from the plant that creates the marijuana as we know it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that was
very interesting because we have strict marijuana laws in the state of Texas, but then again, you go across the border into Oklahoma and you can get what you want. Arizona, Arkansas, Louisiana. So it's just very, very strange.
Yeah. Well, from what they are telling me here is that there is a farm in Texas, and Texas Agriculture, the Commissioner of Agriculture has agreed to, and it is legal to grow hemp in Texas, cannabis hemp, which is lower than 0.3%. The first farm is off of Highway 30-25. Highway 46, I'm sorry. And it was House Bill 30.25. That's what they're saying. House Bill 30.25. Have you all not heard about that yet?
I am not familiar with it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I guess this person is from the state saying this. Okay. Well, anyway, what I wanted to also, we want to talk about tonight was the Texas expungement I guess that's the procedure in what a person, if they have to fill out an application, what is the protocol for getting expungement done for a person? Can you all talk about that?
I'll defer to Judge. Judge, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. If you meet the requirement for an expunction for whatever type of case that you had, if you've met whatever, you know, if there are some statutory limits or guidelines and time frames that you have to meet, then you have to file a petition to have your record expunged. And that petition can be found or obtained from the district clerk office, Dallas County District Clerk.
Mm-hmm.
You can certainly go online for on dallascounty.org and look for forms. People can file their own petitions for expunction or non-disclosures, which are two different things, but
mm-hmm.
accomplish almost the same goal. And you have to file that with the state in the county in which you're trying to have your record expunged. And then the prosecutors will look at it and decide if they agree or not. If they
and
agree,
generally,
they'll send it up to the judge.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Generally speaking, expunction is only available if the person was tried and found not guilty, or if the case was dismissed, or if no charges were brought, and things like that. So if a person has been convicted of a crime, it's going to be very difficult for them to have the matter expunged. It's really directed towards those who may have gotten charged and never convicted. But I want to say that because I want to make sure that people don't think, okay, I went in, I served my 2 years, and now I want to have it expunged. That's not going to happen.
Okay. But what kind of records did you say they had to have?
If the case has been dismissed,
mm-hmm.
if they have been found not guilty of the offense, or if no charges were ever brought, which means, for example, the grand jury no-billed them or something to that effect, or no charge was ever brought, then they would be immediately eligible for expunction. But if they've been convicted, that's when things get a little hairy, or if they've been on probation, depending upon what kind of probation they were on. Is it deferred adjudication probation? Straight probation, all of those things go into account. And when the person files the petition for expunction, all of those things will be set out in the document asking them what kind of case it is.
I see. Okay. Well, I want to take a little break here and kind of do a shout out because I had promised I'm not going to stay long, but I wanted to let everybody know again about our legal clinic that's going to be on Saturday at the Mesquite Friendship Baptist Church, which is located at 680 U.S. Highway 80. That's in Mesquite, Texas, between Galloway and Beltline. And hopefully we will have a vast number of more attorneys there to help everyone. We're trying to get someone from the county clerk's office. I think the DA is in Florida at a convention or something, so I'm not being able to get anybody from the DA's office. But nevertheless, we are trying to get as many attorneys that we can to come out and help the people who have a lot of questions. And I want to do a shout out also to my friend who is having a grand opening on May the 9th. At 5 o'clock p.m., which is next week. It's called The Other Side with Dwayne Carraway. And he's having an in-person podcast that he's going to kick off, as well as his birthday. So I want to say happy birthday to Dwayne Carraway and much success in his new podcast. And everybody, if they want to stop by there, he may get mad at me for saying this, but you can. On May the 9th at 5 o'clock at 6333 Denton Drive. That's over there by the left field area. So it's going to be nice. And also to my granddaughter, Jamari Sauls and Christopher Smith, they're having their big wedding on Sunday at 2:00. So I want to tell them congratulations on their birthday, on their marriage. And I'm having all kind of texts and things here. So if any of you have any questions, to please dial the 563-999-3739. And if you have any questions to ask the special guest judges that's here tonight, just call the number again, which is 563-999-3739, and punch the number 1. We can know that you have some questions. I see a lot that's listening, but I haven't seen any hand raises. But let's go back to our panelists. So Judge Moorhead and Judge Landers, could you tell me a little bit about your specialty also? I know you all have lengthy. I remember, Victor, when you was in college, I was your dad and your mom was my mentor. I think I was the youngest person in Dallas that had all friends who was willing to be my aunties or my uncles. But your mom and your dad mentored me as a young girl when I first came to Dallas because I was on a board with your mother. So I've known your parents a long time. And when I first met them, you was in law school. So she would talk about you a lot. Tell me a little bit about your major in and what's college and everything.
That was a long time ago, Ms. Verna.
I did not know you had a twin brother. You know, I didn't know that.
Well, he's not a twin. He's actually older than I am, 2 years older than I am.
He
just
looks
like me.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I went to, back in those days, I went to Morehouse College in Atlanta. And when I graduated from Morehouse, I went to the University of Texas at Austin Law School, and then got out of law school, ended up in Washington, D.C., working for the Federal Communications Commission. And after 8 years at the FCC, I came to Dallas. I say back to Dallas, but I had never really lived here. But I came to Dallas and started a law practice with my father, Fred Lander, that you know very well. And we practiced law together for about a little over 10 years. Then I became an associate judge for the City of Dallas Municipal Court. As an associate judge, you're allowed to continue your practice of law just so long as you don't have any cases pending against the City of Dallas. And so by that time, I didn't. So I became an associate judge. And after 5 years as an associate judge, I became a full-time judge. And all the way up to becoming the administrative judge, the chief judge, for 4 years, in charge of the entire operation of the judiciary for the City of Dallas for a period of 4 years, then went back to being a regular judge, and then retired. And so that's my resume, long and short.
Very good. Well, can you, for instance, you can tell people about how to get their tickets so resolved, right, their traffic tickets?
Oh, absolutely. I can tell them about how to get involved and how to I actually did some classes for code enforcement as to how and why to write tickets. So I've gone in both directions, both from the individual who receives the tickets to the individuals who are giving the tickets. So it's a little knowledge that I still have.
Well, you know, I'm going to get to Audrey in just a minute and talk a little bit about her dad, but when I was a young girl coming up here in Dallas, my best friends was Judy Lott and Mr. Lipskin, and they knew everybody. But your dad would help me because he worked for EEOC, him and Mr. Hester. They was over that program down there. And your dad was big lawyers there. And Clarence Thomas in 1981 came to Dallas. At that time, Ronald Reagan was president. And I was working with Mr. Lipskin. And Norman Moorhead was one of our good friends. But at that time, your dad was with EEOC. And I had like 3 cases in the EEOC office. And Clarence Thomas was the chairperson over EEOC. Do you recall that? Do you remember any of that?
I remember when he was with EEOC, yes. I actually met him when I lived in Washington.
Well, I was involved with trying to straighten up some things here in Dallas with the BISD. And every job I went on, my degree is in business and computer science. And I worked so hard for that, but I never was able to really stay on a job long enough because people would find out who I was and would fire me. I got so many terminations because I was involved in Dallas back then. And they said I was an activist, black activist, a lady, you know, who went to the school board all the time. But Mr. Hester and your dad was such a big mentor to me, such encouraging to me, because I had a lot of problems back then. And Clarence Thomas was one that also he helped me when he was with EEOC. So we go a long way back, Victor. And your parents is both deceased today, but I applaud what they did for me because they was my mentors, my big brothers, my big sisters, you know, to help me along.
Well, I thank you very much for that. I do remember them fondly. And my father, when he retired from the EEOC, that's when he asked me to come and join him and create the law firm here in Dallas. And we ended up with the first black father-son law firm in the state of Texas. So, yes, it is ancient history, but it is history upon which all of Dallas is written.
Yes, it is. And, you know, I want to applaud your dad and Cleopas Steele because they really had the first legal clinic at Good Street. So,
we did.
Yeah, I mean, and I remember that. So, but Mr. Norman Moorhead and Audrey, your dad, I think you probably was a baby maybe. I don't know. But your
Audrey's
dad.
Much younger
I beg your pardon?
I said Audrey is much younger than I am.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, her dad was over some the senior citizens. I mean the 211 program. It wasn't 211 back then, but Mr. Lipscomb's mother was living. Mrs. I think her name was. Anyway, Irene. But she was. I'm just trying up there. Okay, I just got a text from Judge Collins. She's trying to get on. But your dad, Audrey, was such a hero to Al Lipscomb and me, because every little senior citizen who had problems in Dallas, Texas, Mr. Lipscomb would call on your dad. I mean, if they had, if they needed their light bill paid, or they needed a windows put in their houses or whatever, your dad was the go-to person for our community center back in the 70s. I mean, in the late 70s and early 80s. So I applaud your dad for everything that he did for Dallas as well. But I wanted to hear about you. I know you probably is a spoiled, the only child, they spoiled child, because my girlfriend told me that your mother was her professor when she was in college and she babysitted you.
Yes, that'd be true.
Your mother took you to college with her. I mean, when she went to school, or when she taught at school, I think she took you with her sometimes because my friend...
The college was across the street, so it was not like... I mean, we lived across the street from Texas College, so...
Okay.
It wasn't very far to go to babysit me. You just walk out the women's dorm, and there I am.
Okay. Now, what was your study in school?
Well, actually, I would like to go back to Judge Landers because I don't know, maybe he just don't want to claim me now, but I would not really even be a lawyer were it not for Victor because he swore me to the bar. He signed my documents that I sent off to the State Bar of Texas that authorized me to practice law in the state of Texas, and it kind of full circle because his father, I met Judge Landers' family when I was 10 years old.
Really?
And his father, I grew up with him. I know his mama, his daddy, his brother, it's a whole family thing over here. And I believe back in those days, I believe stalwart men like my dad and Judge Landers' father took a lot of responsibility for uplifting in the community, and they worked together. Judge Landers was my family's attorney, my dad's attorney, and my mom's attorney, and handled our family law business. While I never planned on being a lawyer, when it came time for me to have somebody say that I would be fit for service, I went to Judge Landers to do that. And I appreciate him for that. I would love him always for having.
Well, thank you. Thank you for remembering that. That's very, very nice.
On my behalf, I appreciate it. I always will.
Well, your parents was, I just want to tell y'all, you know, you come from great parents. They helped me when I was a young girl and growing up here in Dallas too as well. And Victor, you know, I wrote a book. I don't know if I talk about your parents or not in that book. I don't remember, but I talk about the things that we had to do in here in Dallas to make it work. I think we just got in. We just got Dominique Collins maybe came in. I'm not sure. In my book, I talk a lot about the cases that I had to go through with EEOC, that's for sure. But I want to say this, that we are still getting text messages in here from people who, I guess, is having problems. And Audrey, you're not going to be able to come Saturday. Who's coming on Saturday? Victor, will either of you all be there on Saturday?
I am not going to be able to be there because the commencement for Paul Quinn is on Saturday, and I have to be there because actually they're giving me an award as Professor of the Year, interestingly enough. So that's
congratulations.
I think that was a way for them to make sure that I come to commencement.
Well, I wish I was able to come and see you get that award, Victor. I really do. Because I know you're so...
Well, I appreciate it.
Yes. And I know you're so rewarded.
So I'm not going to be able to be there, but I wish you the best of luck. You know I'm with you.
Yes, I know. So, and one of the things that I want to say, though, on Saturday, we are going to ask everybody to come in. Dominique Collins will be our narrator. She's not on the, she just texted me that she's trying to get in. So she probably had a late court there in her courtroom today. She's an awfully hard-working little judge, and we know that. But she's going to be there Saturday for sure. And we're telling everybody that those people who want to talk or want to have something done, and maybe not want everybody to know what they want from the legal clinic, we're going to have them to register, everybody to register, and there will be cards they can fill out and give to us, and we will give it to the judge, and she will ask the attorneys there the questions what the audience is asking for or needing help with. So a lot of it is about police stops, and from what I can understand, they have been stopping people if they look a certain way. And I don't know what that means. I mean, you know, if they look a certain way, they stop. And if there's nothing in the car, and they don't smell marijuana, they don't find marijuana, they don't have a gun, why would they make a person sit outside their car?
And well, technically, under the law, the police officers are not supposed to stop somebody unless they have violated a traffic law or unless they have reasonable suspicion, not necessarily probable cause, but reasonable suspicion to believe that a criminal activity is going on. And just because you happen to be black and driving a Mercedes is not reasonable suspicion that criminal activity is going on. So there are methods by which people who are stopped can, particularly if they're stopped and there's nothing going on, can complain about it. There is a board here in Dallas, a citizens review board, and it's citizens police review board, and it is designed specifically to take those kinds of complaints and to keep these officers from doing those kinds of things.
Do that review board review people, officers that in Richardson as well as Dallas?
No, no. This is only for the city of Dallas.
Okay. What happens if a person is in Richardson or Louisville and they get stopped and they don't find anything?
I'm afraid, to my knowledge, Richardson does not have a similar board. All I would recommend somebody to do if they are stopped and they're, you know, feel that they have been profiled and stopped, to immediately, first of all, pay attention to what the officer says and does. Follow the instructions that the officer gives, because you do not want to confront the officer on the side of the road. You want to make sure you get the badge number of the officer, the time, date, location of the stop, and then file a complaint directly with the chief of police for Richardson or wherever, whatever city they're in. It is better to take it to court than it is to try to deal with it on the side of the road.
Okay. All right. Well, that's some of the questions that that's came in here so far. And we have quite a few people who have, and there's Judge Collins. She's finally here. Well, Collins, I know that you're on the line now, so. Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, sorry. Too late. I kind of overextended myself today. Sorry about that.
Okay. Well, Judge Collins, can you tell us a little bit about what you think is going to happen on Saturday?
Well, I think we ask some questions, and we're going to have a lot of people there to help them answer. If you don't have a lawyer to do that, we'll find somebody who does.
Okay. Now, you're going to be the moderator for Saturday, right?
I think so.
Okay. But you will be on time on Saturday, right?
I'm always on time. It's for other people.
Okay. All right. Well, we just wanted to make sure.
My military art says be on time.
Okay. Well, I tell you this. We always have the opinion on you, and you was always there. So I'm just so happy that you're going to
be
there.
It's in the morning.
Yeah, it's going to be in the morning at 10 o'clock. So we're telling everybody to make sure they try to get there. We're going to have plenty of seats there and maybe some refreshments. I don't know. We're trying to get some refreshments. I didn't ask for refreshments in time. But there's going to be a lot of good lawyers there. We have also the legal clinic that's coming in there. It's called the Legal Aid Northwest Texas office, the Legal Aid of Northwest Texas. And I know we have, I think, two attorneys and a paralegal that's coming from their offices, and they're going to be talking about a lot of things that people is having trouble with, and that's the evictions law and the eviction rights for people who've been evicted.
They're really good with that.
I beg your pardon?
They're very good with evictions. My daughter used to work there for evictions in the law clinic.
Uh-huh.
And so they help a lot of people to stay in their homes.
Right. Well, I know they're going to be talking about that as well as helping people get their children back. I do know that we have a lot of parents who sometimes is confronted with a boyfriend or a husband who wants the children and take the children away without the parents. Without the mother knowing it, and don't bring the children back. So
that's the thing. You have to establish parental rights early on when you separate, or that can happen. Because when that happens and you don't separate parental rights, then both of them have equal access to this child.
Yes. But I don't think that sometimes when people are not married, they don't get married, but they have children, that the right goes to the mother, though. Am I correct?
No, it doesn't. I mean, it's basically you have an established parental right. Like, who knows who has rights? You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to break up, then get on child support and do it right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And have the courts establish who's the managing conservator, who has, you know, possession and under what circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now Judge, Judge Collins, I've had Judge Lander and Judge Audrey Moorhead both to talk about their college and a little bit about their courts I mean, what a lot about their course and their background. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are, your college days, and, you know, back to your course?
Well, I started an undergrad at the University of Texas, and then I went to the Air Force, only having finished half my degree. Then I finished the other half in the Air Force. I finished at Campbell University in North Carolina. And then I was in the Air Force for 12 years, and then I left the Air Force and went to law school at St. Mary's, San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was a district attorney for 8 years, and I've been a judge for 10.
Mm.
And my court handles, minor state jail felonies all the way up to capital murder, death penalty cases. I also have a veterans court and a mental health court running out of there.
So your court is the big criminal court, the felony court. Am I correct?
Yeah, it's one of 17 felony courts.
Okay. So your court also handles capital murder cases?
Yes. Well. I mean, most of them are just regular capital murders where the person just gets automatic life with no parole. But then, we have one capital murder that's come through that's not been there, where somebody got the needle, or is getting the needle, pardon me. But that's under the most bizarre of circumstances. You know, the state doesn't ask for that very much.
I see. Okay. Well, we're going to have a very interesting legal clinic. We got some of the top judges, some of the top lawyers that's coming, and I'm very excited about it. And again, I want to thank everybody that's all the lawyers that's on air tonight. I know that we got two or three that's listening in, and we have some that's online because they're sending me little text messages. But I want to thank all of them for listening and knowing that many of them will be there on Saturday. And again, I want to give people this address for Mesquite Friendship Baptist Church, which is 680 U.S. Highway 80 in Mesquite, Texas. And that's between the Galloway exit off of Highway 80 and the Beltline exit. So that is my church. I'm very proud of my church. I'm very proud of my pastor, Reverend Turner, and his son, Caleb Turner. So I'm very proud of my church family. And I know Judge Collins, you've been there before. And we had so many people until you had to just stay there, and the line was so long. And you was the only one. You remember that when you was there? And I think you had a boot on your foot. Something, your foot had been...
Yeah, I broke my foot. It had a boot in it.
And you had to sit there and talk to those people. They was in line waiting to talk with you.
I think you ended up talking to them.
You did. You stayed there till every one of them. You saw every last one of them. And it was way past the time that we was, it was over. But you never, you waited on everybody. You talked about to everybody and gave them information what they needed. And they were so happy with you. So I want to thank you for doing that and being there. And
I like to serve.
You like to serve. I understand. And Victor and Audrey, I hope that Audrey is my little cousin. I want everybody to know that. That's my my husband's cousin. And we found that out when we went to Audrey's pouring in. He saw all his kinfolk that I pouring in, and he didn't know that that was their daughter until we got there. Isn't that something? Small.
Nice.
Yep. So I want to, and Victor, if I wasn't there, I will be there seeing you get your award on Saturday because
I look at you
as being my brother, my little brother, rather. And I thank you for all what you do. But
what kind of award are you getting, much. Judge? Oh, hi, Judge Collins. Paul Quinn has named me the Professor of the Year.
That's fantastic. What time is this happening?
This is Saturday, right at the same, between 8 and 10.
Okay.
Over at Paul Quinn. And I think they're doing it because they want to make sure I come to the graduation.
I'm
sure it's more than that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure it's a very well-deserved award. Thank you. While I've got you on the line here, Judge Collins, I want everybody who's listening and paying attention to this podcast to know that if there was ever a person who personifies what a judge should be,
It is Dominique Collins. I am telling the absolute honest truth. If we could have all judges to serve the way you do, we would not have half the problems we have in the judiciary from the low municipal judiciary all the way up to the district court. And so I want you to know that there are those of us out here who recognize that and appreciate your work.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're trying to make me cry. That's very nice.
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly.
Yes. You
it's
know what? And
standard.
And you know, one of the things too, Judge Landers and Audrey, when a person gives their time like Judge Collins do and work as hard as she do, I never have seen them with an opponent. Nobody would run against them because they know they probably can't beat her. Because everybody likes
it. On the Republican side. Let's do some support then.
No, they
like it. 2024. I'm up for election.
Yeah, whatever.
You'll do just fine. Don't even worry about it.
Well, anyway, I did not know you was a DA for 8 years. You worked for the DA's office?
I did. Huh. I did everything there, and so I was the mental health DA for 3.5 years, and I enjoyed that. And so I guess one of the judges liked the way they saw me working, I guess, and said you should run for the judge because Judge Trudeau's retiring. And I was like, that's really nice. Now that's goodbye. Then I thought about it, and I said, well, let me ask him what he thinks. And he's like, well, we need good people, so go for it.
And I'm so glad.
It's been great.
Okay. Well, one of the things, too, since when you said mental health, it dawned on me that I have this on my it's right in front of my face. In our legal clinic on Saturday, we have some teachers that cannot be there because they're scared they may get fired or whatever. But they're worried about the what type of help do a teacher have? What can a teacher do? Is it a mental problem? These children is acting out like this, or what will a teacher have to do to protect themselves? In other words, you have some children that they don't know if they're bringing guns to school because they wear these big baggy clothes, and they do some very weird stuff. And they tell them to get up and get out. They can't really put them out their class in some schools, but when they tell them to get up and get out of the class or they go to the office or whatever, they don't go. They just sit there. And one teacher told me and said this guy threatened her. And but when she reported, they did nothing happen. So what type of rights do a teacher have today?
The world's a very, very scary place right about now. And honestly, you know, the teacher getting shot by a little 6-year-old boy, I mean, it's real scary right now. And I applaud teachers. I respect them. And I love them for what they do. But it's a scary place right now. So much uncertainty, and you don't know who you're dealing with and what they've gone through that day or what kind of house they came out of. You know, it's not the day when you get going to call your mama and you start shivering and shaking and sweating. So I don't know. I just think that if I were a teacher and a student acted out on me, I just would probably leave the classroom, tell the principal, you're in charge, or tell the people, the security, you're in charge. I'm not going to do that with this student.
Mm-hmm.
Protect yourself and protect your family, and you get home to your family because they need you more, honestly, than those students do. Protect yourself. And if that means removing yourself from the situation, then remove yourself. And it's okay.
Well,
I completely agree with Judge Collins. I think that the only thing that a teacher can do in a situation like that is get up, walk out of the classroom, go straight to the office, and tell the security people and the principal, I'm not going back to that classroom until somebody goes in there and takes care of the situation. Protect yourself. That's all you can do, because believe me, the system's not going to protect you.
No, they're not. You know, just say, you know what, I'll see students. I don't see Satan. Goodbye. I'll see y'all tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Walk on out of there.
Yeah, you get home to
your
family.
If you lose your job over it, it's because that's not the job for you. And it's better to lose your job than to lose your life.
Yeah, your family needs you. Protect yourself, protect your energy, protect your family.
Mm-hmm. Well, this guy, I remember this man. He was teaching this class at the alternative school, CISC. And this girl hit him, and she kept hitting him. Nobody would intervene. And she actually beat him up outside the school, and he ran away, and she ran behind him and kept trying to beat up on him. And that man ended up having to, he had a workers' comp case, but he ended up, losing his life because it was sad, very sad. Because
that's horrible.
Emotionally, he was harmed by that afterwards. But do you think it's a mental problem that's going through these children? Because one lady from, I almost call the school district, but she told me that this guy comes to school every day smelling like marijuana. And she asks him, she told him, she said, why do you come in here every day smoking that stuff? He said, I'm not smoking anything. He said, that was my mom. My mother smokes that stuff when she brings me to school. You understand what I'm saying? So how do you cope with that when you know the child is going through something, maybe a mental problem?
I remember getting paddles because my mom smoked cigarettes. I remember getting paddles because my mom smoked in the car with the windows up. And the lady said, you're smoking, I'm going to paddle you. I mean, you don't know what people have been through before they get to school. You don't know where they live, what they're going through. You have to just be mindful and in the end, try to be kind. But, you know, at the end, be kind to yourself and get out of there and do not do that with them.
Well, it's just
most people I see in court have not been properly parented or loved. That's why they're in my court. You know, sometimes the parents are like chasing the job, chasing the person, chasing an addiction. And so that's just that they're not there for them. So the streets parent the children.
The streets parents the children. Isn't that something? Isn't that something? Well, Judge Collins, also, you talk about you have a veterans court. A lot of the veterans that's homeless today, do you work with the veterans that's homeless that needs probably housing? Do you do that?
Well, what I do is I work with the veterans who come in contact with the criminal justice system. They've gotten arrested because of PTSD or because the military has so many problems sometimes. You know, there's military sexual trauma. There's PTSD. There is the drinking culture, because when you get in the military, not anymore, but when I was in, the first week you're in, on Friday, they take you to the NCO club and they get you a card and you start drinking for free, drinking on credit. And so it's a culture. It's been broken or trying to be broken for about 25 years. But it's going to take a long time to break a culture that's been in existence since the military business. So it's going to take a while to break those horrible, horrible, horrible traditions. And so we have so many veterans that drinking culture is a part of the thing. We have veterans getting on disability because they have gotten in trouble. They have DWIs because of the military drinking culture. And so we've got to, it's going to take about 25 more years to solve this problem and stop that being something that we teach our military people to do. They say, oh, Judge, I know I'm in trouble, but the Army taught me how to drink. When you tell me how to drink, it's like, no, no, no. I know that, but let's teach you how to not drink.
Mm-hmm.
It is a real, real, real thing. And so breaking that military drinking culture is very, very, very hard.
But do your court, you only help them when they have a mental problem? That's what you're saying?
Well, I have two courts, three actually. My regular court, my veterans court, and my mental health court. They are separate. So veterans who get in trouble because of something that's happened in the military, like I said, military drinking culture or military sexual trauma, PTSD, just, you know, survivor's remorse, like all my friends died, but I wasn't there that day, and they all died. I would have died too. Why me? Why me? Why am I still here? That's survivor's remorse. So we have a lot of that, too.
Mm-hmm.
So lots to overcome. Ooh. When the unit's dead, but you didn't die because it's your one day off.
And you have a lot going on.
When I was in the Gulf War, I had one day off out of 8 days, right? So let's say I'm off this day, and that's the day when my unit got bombed. That's a big thing for somebody to survive because it's their day off. They have fun or just resting.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, my unit's dead, but I'm alive. I don't deserve to be here. They start drinking and drugging, and it's just a horrible thing.
Oh, my goodness. So you have to hear from the VA court as well as your criminal court.
And the mental health court.
And the mental health court. Mm. So you are a very, very busy person. And I want to thank
you. That's why I was late. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. I really want to thank all three of you for being on our podcast tonight. You have given a lot of people a lot of good information. That's listening online as well as they're listening on, and that, as we see them here on the side. So I want to applaud you for all that you do for the community and what you do for the community. And I know Dominique and, I mean, Judge Collins and Judge Landers, Judge Moorhead, you all is a part of our team. I want to make sure you know that we put your name on our emails, on our stationery, everything. We're so proud of you for always being here for us, and we're going to be continually doing. I am talking with my pastor now to try to allow us to have a legal clinics maybe every 2 months or every 3 months there for the East Dallas, Mesquite, Garland area, because we have people from all over this area and some from Oak Cliff that comes to church there. But mostly it's for the area residents that live in the area who can get there on Saturdays to come by and listen with their and for you all to be able to hear some of their problems, what they're going through, and they cannot afford an attorney. And what I want you to be prepared for, Judge Collins, is that we've got a lot of people that's coming there on Saturday for wills, and we got Candace coming, but if you know of any other attorneys that want to come out, invite them to come, because we have parental help. We have a lot of parents who need parental help with their children, a guardianship. They want to know how do they do appeals when they don't have no attorney. Disability, when you don't have money to pay for your taxes, or your taxes exceed your income. And I've been trying to tell them to make sure you sign that first sheet when you get it from the appraisal district and send it back to appeal that. So, but they're going to have a lot of problems.
We need to call John Ames tomorrow to see if he'll come without a suit.
Well,
he says, I don't want your house. I have to mow your grass. I want you to pay your taxes. I want to give you a payment plan. So let's call him too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we need to call him, but I had a person that's supposed to be calling him for me, but I haven't heard back from them. But we have a lot of cases also with police pullovers, and because of these guys, and this guy did have a Mercedes, and he was pulled over by a police officer, but not in Dallas, Texas, not in Dallas. He was outside of Dallas. So, but anyway, a lot of these people are going to be there. So, I want you all just be prepared for that and be patient.
Well, I'll reach out to John Ames tomorrow.
I appreciate that.
And,
I really do.
And see if he can come. Yeah, we'll see if he can come too.
Well, or either somebody from his office to come, because they need to know there's so many senior citizens that's losing their homes because their taxes is so high until they just don't pay their taxes. Taxes is like 2 or 3 years old.
I'll call him tomorrow. He wants a payment plan. He does not want your house. He says, "I don't want to cut your grass. Let me. I'll reach out to him tomorrow."
Okay, I appreciate it. And again, I want to thank everybody for being on our podcast tonight, and to let everybody know again that the legal clinic will be starting at 10 o'clock on Saturday, this Saturday, at the Mesquite Friendship Baptist Church at the 680 U.S. Highway 80. And I want to again shout out to my friend, who is getting married this weekend, Jamari and Chris. And I also want to talk about Dwayne Carraway's Dick Bash on next Tuesday. Dominique, did you hear that? I mean, Miss Collins, did you hear that?
No, I didn't.
Mr. Carraway's, he's having his big birthday party and also opening up his office on next Tuesday And I thought I had the information here, but I guess I lost it. I got so much information, but it's going to be the ribbon cutting for his new office as well as his new podcast. And this would be I think his podcast is much bigger than this one. It's going to be a live podcast. It starts at 5 o'clock next Tuesday on May the 9th, and the address again is 6333 Denton Drive. So that's a good shout-out for Dwayne Carraway, and that's like my little brother, too. I love him to death, and he's also a part of my book, Victory. So you got to get my – Victor Young got to get my book. Okay. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening to our podcast tonight, and please tune in next Thursday night at 8 o'clock. And to my guests, I love you all very much, and you know that. The community loves you because you're always there for us, okay? And I want you all to do that.
I'll see you on Saturday.
Thank you so very much.
Some child watching mama run from pillar to pillar.